I'm good. We're the only prompt ones.
I was almost not prompt. I was finishing up the dishes.
Well, that's a good reason. I absolutely endorse that excuse, so you don't have a problem.
It seems like whenever I have a conference call or something happens, or even when we have one of our club meetings, usually our dinner's at 6, but somehow something comes up and we don't end up eating until 6:15, and then it just runs on and on.
Well, hopefully it's tasty.
Yeah, my wife is a good cook. Got to say that.
Well, you know, we all try. It's really great when it's appreciated. although lately it's been too hot for me to cook. All right, let's start on my minutes. I've got Diana and Mark.
Theophanitis.
Right. Theophanitis.
Just like a spell.
Theophanitis. Now I got it. Hey, Vinny.
Hello.
Yeah, I got to get you that insurance.
Yeah, I've been kind of dragging my feet. I don't even know if those shows are even going to happen, but we got to be ready. So
I don't know. You know, they say they are. I checked with someone else who would know, and he said, yeah, SEMA's going on. And
yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, we're all signed up, so I just need those insurance forms, that's all. And I'm sure they got a little leeway with everything that's going on. But, I had to turn in some other paperwork, too, so I got that done. Tell them we're not selling anything.
Yeah, we always have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, ad name, 928 area code. Who are we welcoming?
Terry Work.
Oh, do you have a new number, Terry?
Yes, I do. I'm in Arizona now.
Hey, congratulations.
Ken Oyer.
People are coming on quicker than I can type. All right, Lance.
Hey, everybody.
And Butch. And Lori, Bob, and Ed. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. 8.
Here they come.
Okay, 8, let's see, total is 15. Oops, put you in the wrong place, Charlie. I will now put you in the right place.
All right.
Got Mike. And Bruce Brazil.
Yep.
Your thing on here shows up as anonymous B. That's my note to myself.
Okay.
So we have 12 board members on. Past President Diana, we do have a quorum.
Okay. Then let's do a call to order. It is 7:01 p.m. And we have, let's do a quick roll call. Ken Clark, would you let us know if you're listening? And we will not worry too much about that because he may not be. Jared McLeod.
Here.
Bruce Witcher. Charles Hill.
Here.
Mike Moore.
Mike is here.
Bruce Brazil.
Here. Is ever, like, moving around in the background and making a lot of noise? Can you please mute yourself?
They're moving around in the background, Amy. They can't hear you. Lori Lewis.
Here.
Amy Granat.
Here.
Vinny Barbarino.
I'm here.
Bob Hamm.
Here.
Ed Stoven.
I'm here.
Jim Woods.
Yes, I am here, and so is Roberta Woods.
Wonderful. And Dave Cundy.
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, we do have a quorum, correct?
Yes, and Bruce Witcher just came on.
Wonderful. Welcome, Bruce. I got the names of some guests. I know Terry Work is on, Kent Oyer's on, Butch Miner's on. Can I find out who else is?
Robin Reed.
Mark Theophanidis.
Anyone else?
We've got Lance. Can't pronounce his last name. D-E-S.
Lance Desbailliers.
Thank you. I got the D-E-S right.
I know, it's hard.
It's French, so we go with it.
Yep.
Okay. Welcome, everyone. Does everyone have a copy of the agenda either in front of them or had an opportunity to take a look at it earlier today? I'm going to take that as a yes, because if you didn't, no was the appropriate answer. Any modifications or additions to the agenda that you'd like to place it now? And we'll run this meeting in a way that allows us to add and change things as we go if we need to.
Okay. We just did have someone come on with an 818 area code. Hi, welcome to our call. Who is it?
Dave Sloger.
Hey, Dave.
Hey,
how are you?
Dave. Delighted to have you.
I'm delighted to listen.
Okay. We will hold you that. We'll see if we got something you need to weigh in on, though. Ken had surgery earlier today, so he's not handling this meeting. He asked me to do so. It is time for the president's report. Ken did not provide me with anything. And I think what we're going to do at this point is just wish Ken well. I hoping he might be listening in, and we'll come back and interject as need be. But this does bring us to Amy for the Managing Director's Report.
Okay, I sent everyone out a report earlier, and I'll just go over a few, I think, important points. I did want to tell everybody on the call that Brian Robertson just got out of the hospital. He did not have COVID, but he did have a pulmonary embolism, which is quite serious, and he's the winner of a past President's Award, so I'm sure we all wish him well. He has worked harder than anybody I know on behalf of all the SVRAs and off-roaders in California, and we were very worried about him when we heard he was rushed to the hospital. He's home resting with his family now, but I'm sure everybody wishes him well. We have a number of issues. Chief among them, I would say, are Oceana Dunes and Carnegie. Carnegie, because of the fires, and I'm going to ask Diana to update. She has more information than I do, although I did speak to a couple people in the administration today about it. And please know that once you hear Diana's report, it is alarming, but they are following up. So, Diana, do you want to talk a little bit about the fires?
Sure, and Bruce Brazil, you're really up to date on this stuff too, so I would appreciate your interjection when appropriate. In Amy's report, she noted that Carnegie is closed. It actually is not. Just the West Hills, the area that was actually burned this go-round, is closed. I spoke with Brian Robertson the day after the fire, or late in the day of the fire, and they had thought they had identified a cause, but it was way too soon to really say anything definitive. But he had not heard that embered logs had been found at Carnegie off of one of the backcountry type trails, not along the road. This happened on July 4th. Just before the holiday weekend or during the holiday weekend, and these logs were, is that me that's echoing or is there?
You know, I'm going to try, if it's okay, I'm going to mute everyone and unmute you. Just give me a second, Diana. Okay, Diana, I've unmuted you.
Okay.
Is that better?
Yeah. I was hearing some reverb type sounds. So the July 4th weekend, there's a video. It is on Carnegie Forever and a few other places where you can see it. A rider, just a regular guy who goes out there all the time and well known to our community because he's quite an advocate, and we really appreciate his efforts and his passion, found these embers about 3 feet off the trail. What I mean by that is basically not fully burned logs that were still burning. And they were obviously purposely dropped there. It couldn't have accidentally happened. There wouldn't be any reason for anybody to be carrying stuff from their fire out into the park itself. We've had several fires at Carnegie over the last 2 years that the down low, the words are that some of them have been caused by arson of some sort. I don't know that there's anything definitive, and they generally happen during fire season, but there's an ugliness attached to even the thought that somebody would do something like that. Now, obviously, this person picked up those embers. He's made his personal mission because he does have a green-stickered motorcycle and he can run at Carnegie this time of year to kind of patrol. I think as a community, we need to take this on and become whether it is a member of our community, which I highly doubt, or whether it's an adversary, or whether it's just some person who has problems and likes to set fires, perhaps, it really doesn't matter because the end result for us is the same. We lose riding area. I don't have a prognosis for the West Hills yet. This is very early on, but the remainder of the park is open. Also on Carnegie, some actually good news. We had the Altamont Waste Management Fund, and a finite amount of money, or an infinite seemed like amount of money, like $12 million, was kind of set aside for purchase of property, and they kind of allocated that to our expansion property. Word has it now that they have actually found themselves a piece of property or a parcel that they prefer to buy. They're in negotiations for it now, so they're no longer interested in our expansion area. It doesn't mean we're in the clear, but it does mean that that particular funding source is no longer available. This does bode well for us. And I think that's it. Bruce, do you have anything you wanted to add?
Just a second. I'm little by little, I'm unmuting people to find. So that's Bruce, and there's a little bit of interference behind him.
Today's the first I've heard of the fires out at Carnegie, so I've got nothing to contribute. Very sorry. Oh,
okay.
Diana, when you say the Western Hills, are you talking about the expansion area?
No. The West Hills, I'm talking about, you are correct, the expansion area is on the western end of the park, and that. But I'm talking about the current park today, the West Hills are closed. That includes Juniper, Pottery Loop, a lot of the beginners areas, which is very sad.
So this is Vinny. Are we thinking that was purposely put there to burn the park and have them close it? Would make sense to me if people would do that.
We have some incredibly persistent adversaries there. The primary leader of that group is a property neighbor of the park. It's a person whose father actually dedicated land to the park along with and worked with John Garamendi, who was a state assembly person at the time, to create what is currently Carnegie SCRA. This man, after his father died, tried like heck to get that property back. He has to access his ranch through an easement in the park. He hates OHV. He hates us, and I don't think I'm being actually broad in that stroke. Hate is a relatively strong word, but there's nothing less than that. And this man has sued no fewer than 27 times in various ways to hurt, harm, take away. He's been behind virtually every effort, including the water boards, the creek conditions, so many of the things that we've put in place to improve and take care of Carnegie has been at his inspiration, if you will. The trail that this was located on was not a single track, and I think that's important because this man is not a motorcycle rider. I'm getting dangerously close to saying something that we have no proof, but there have been too many fires. I think we're talking about four in the last 3 years. And some are in areas that have been burned before. It just doesn't kind of make sense. And having found those logs, that kind of puts in perspective that we might potentially have a very real problem, and we're trying to figure out exactly how we get investigations by not state, not just state personnel, but maybe Alameda County Sheriff's Department, who gets money from us every year, needs to be involved with this. But I don't want to take a whole lot of time to talk about it, but I do think it's really important that everyone understand that this problem at Carnegie isn't going to go away no matter what we fix or don't fix elsewhere. This is going to be a constant constant fight, a constant battle, and we get better at every single one, but it's just not good enough until this man, I mean, he's not even that old. We can't even hope for, maybe we can hope for COVID. I don't know. But he's a scary dude. He's a lawyer, and so he funds most of his own lawsuits, but he has no shyness whatsoever for coming back after the fund that was put in place to make it possible for the underdog to sue the state. So he's kind of a scary for us in that SB 249 was actually initiated by the 11 different groups that were pushing back against Carnegie in the expansion area. So we ended up with state legislation that turned out in our favor only because of the extremely hard work of a few key individuals who are on this call tonight. But it was an effort in the beginning, SB 249, an effort to kill the OHV program and division, and it emanated from Carnegie. I think that's enough. We've got so much else to discuss tonight, but I'm open to questions, obviously.
And everyone is unmuted at this point. Sometimes that really works, muting everybody and then unmuting, and it cuts down on the feedback and interference. Don't ask me why, but anyone has any questions, feel free to speak.
That's really concerning hearing about that that Diana was talking about. I not to sound conspiratorial or anything, but the fact is there's a lot of people out there that absolutely hate OHV, and you know, you got to wonder, it's something that can appear. That was caused from OHV. It's not just happening at Carnegie, but that's even more concerning there. I mean, I feel like they're doing this all across the state. So, I agree with Diana. Everybody needs to keep their eyes out.
Hey, Diana.
One of the things, yes.
This is Ed Stobin. I get that he might set a fire, you know, to screw up Carnegie, but would he risk burning his own land if he did that?
He has a 10,000-acre ranch, and it's well beyond the area that was set on fire. He can afford to have a fire, quite frankly. He would – I don't think this would matter to him, but I'm not – I don't want to leave this call suggesting that Diana accused Mark Conley of starting fires at Carnegie. I doubt very much it was Mark himself. I don't even think that Mark maybe doesn't even know about it. But he is able to...
it's okay with me if you blame him. It's fairly speculative.
Exactly. And he is definitely able to empower people. But, Jared, to your point, one of the things that I want to say is his big beef with OHV is because it impacted him negatively. He has OHV. He has a ranch. He doesn't just ride horses. He's got quads. He's got a side-by-side. He's got tractors. He's got it all.
He just wants his land back?
He wants his way, and he's willing to do almost anything to have his way. There are a lot of people like this.
Mm-hmm.
But what I want to say is remember what happened with SB 249. We had a huge number of environmental groups who were behind the initial bill that would have basically gutted our program. And when you consider that it was inspired by one, not the biggest OHV park, not the highest profile OHV park, but Carnegie SVRA. Really? This is the one that got everybody fired up. But in the end, look at who endorsed SB 249. Several of those high-profile environmental groups endorsed SB 249 to Mark Conley and Friends of Tesla Park, consternation, I might add. But so it seems almost as if you begin to answer back with, here's what we're doing, and here's what we're going to have happen, and we're testing, and we're using science. These bigger groups know when they have expired their collateral, if you will. He's never going to be done. But they are done with Carnegie unless he brings up something egregious again. So, and they've moved on to other parts, as we all know. I guess the point I'm trying to make here is I don't look at this as they hate OHV, therefore they'll do anything. I think the dislike of OHV is not so much dislike of OHV as what they perceive OHV is. And when that perception is taken care of, and or there's no benefit in it for them, they got their needs taken care of, they seem to move on. And I think that's kind of an objective we need to begin to look at. How do we do that elsewhere? It doesn't mean I don't have a problem with fires at Carnegie. I admit it. Still, we're still looking at problems. But at least we can pinpoint that it's not the Sierra Club that started the fire. It's not the Audubon Society that started the fire. And it's not the Native Plant Society. You know, Amy, I'm gonna suggest that Oceano Dunes is going to be a big topic of conversation just because it is. Maybe we could move on to the commission meeting, field reports, and those kinds of things, and let's just bring it back then to Oceano Dunes. What does everybody think about that idea?
Sure. Let's talk about Oceano.
All right. If Bob wants to talk about something, I automatically go with the program.
The only thing I'm going to add to the managing director's report is just with our federal partners to remind people that they are affected as much as everyone is affected, and they have not, in large part, hired summer help. So they are short people and, in some cases, short the amount of manpower that they would need to disinfect sites, campgrounds, restrooms, and things are, especially in the forest, are sort of opening and closing on a moment's notice. So we need to get out there that everybody needs to check websites before, because things really do change overnight in some cases, but some of the forests are really seeing an inundation of people. These aren't our regular people. These aren't our folks. These aren't people who know how to recreate. They're people who don't know how to recreate, and they're leaving trash, garbage, they're driving over, you know, around trails rather than stay on the trails. The agencies know that it's not their regular off-roaders, but if anyone is out in the forest, we need to exert a little peer pressure and some you know, look out for these folks. I talked to Don Alexander for a while, and they are out and about on the trails, the Black Diamond trails in San Bernardino, where they shouldn't be. So people just in pickup trucks, SUVs, on Gold Mountain, not knowing what to do. So keep your eyes out also when you're on federal land for people who need help. So that's just our federal land update. Other than that, federal issues are somewhat quiet, even though the Sustainable Outdoor Recreation Collaborative is ongoing. I'm still not sure what they're supposed to accomplish, but hey, everyone's talking. Oceano, I'm going to share this with Jared. We are very, very lucky as an organization to have so many people involved. I speak with Jared on a regular basis because my job being in Sacramento and having contact with the administration now and all kinds of people is try to get a sense of what they are thinking. I'm going to have to mute some people. Let me see. Okay. I'm going to try to keep it as quiet as you can in the background. The administration is really in a bind, and they're sort of embarrassed. It's what's happening between the COSLA Commission and state parks, and there aren't any easy answers. They put Mark Gold in, but he's extraordinarily uninformed about the OHV program, the OHV Trust Fund, our history at Oceano Dunes. I'm hoping to have a meeting with him at the end of the at the end of this week. I'm just looking for confirmation on it. And just from what I hear from everyone else is that he wants to know. But even being put in that position without the information and without the background. And Parks is sort of in a bind because now the administration is saying, well, leave this to us. We're going to decide what's best. So it's not an easy situation. What it's not as being portrayed on social media in some cases is it's not a concerted effort at Parks against us. There's no conspiracy theories. Actually, Parks has been, from everything I've seen from the documentation, I've seen, it's just been extraordinarily supportive. And that's not always portrayed on social media. And I understand on social media people are doing their frustration. Sometimes the calls, well, you know, somebody do something. Well, there's a lot being done behind the scenes. There are potentials for a couple of lawsuits that we've identified. Lawsuits can't be filed until a decision is made. And there is no decision made. And chances are a lot of this is going to hinge on the public works plan, which is going to be in the works for a long time to come. So I've actually found Parks pretty accommodating, but saying at this point to me, you'll have a better chance getting through and explaining who an off-roader is, and we will. And that's our job, so that's what we're going to do. And I had a meeting last week with a member of the administration. I had a meeting today with a member of the administration. And they're looking at the old triennial reports that we used to do, for people who remember that, that the OHMVR division used to do. They're looking at conservation efforts and actually talking more about conservation efforts and looking at all the restoration grants that we've gotten. So to broaden the conversation beyond just off-roading. And since we do that anyway, and since we pay for that, there's no reason why that shouldn't be part of the conversation. You know, it actually helps us if it's part of the conversation. So that's actually positive that they've started looking at the old triennial reports. I think it's kind of interesting because that would take the division almost a year to complete, but it has some really good information in it. So that's pretty good. We have the next commission meeting is the next issue, the next on the agenda. That will be an opportunity for the two new commissioners to hear from the OHV community. It is a Zoom meeting. Everyone can participate. Anybody who needs a link can. But our commission meetings tend to be much better than Coastal Commission meetings.
Right. And the date?
That's August 6th.
Thank you.
So, Jared, you were one of the people, I'm unmuting you now for you to continue. And then I think what would be most valuable is people to ask a lot of questions, because I think there's a lot of misinformation online. And I'm going to try unmuting everybody again. Okay, Jared?
Okay, you had mentioned it, so I'll start with the OHVMR Commission meeting, August 6th. I'm going to send it right now to the board, but I think it starts at 9 a.m., and Oceano specifically is on the agenda, I believe, 5 or 6 agenda items, and then there's also some other important things, OHV grants. So I'll send that out in just a minute. And then also the next California Coastal Commission meeting is August 12th through 14th. Which brings back to this last one. I'm pretty sure everyone's aware of what's been happening if people are following, you know, social media, or the corporate board members are aware. But so the last month's meeting was interesting. It was, there was a ton of OHV people that called in. And it's gone up month after month for the last, say, 4 months, as opposed to before where, you get a handful of people from OHV or just general recreation or locals. Typically OHV is outnumbered by far on all these meetings, APCD, Coastal Commission. Every time it's the same routine. And then a couple months ago, we started seeing a turn. We've been doing a lot of promotion on social media and like videos and whatnot, trying to get people engaged, giving them the information for these meetings. This last meeting, I think it was 140 people pro OHV called into the meeting. And that was a big deal, especially with everything that's happening. My biggest thing right now that I think is important for everyone, and is the advocacy part of this, because it's something everybody can do, and getting this participation, and it is impossible. Even within my own club, it's really hard. If we get 8 people from our club, that's unbelievable. But we have a huge club. Just getting people to call in and be a part of the process is has to be the biggest challenge, I would say. But every month it's been stepping up, and then this last month, and I know the cease and desist order was a big factor in this, but the point is people are getting engaged and people are realizing what's happening. And people are getting scared and they're getting pissed off, and that's good. And it's important for CORVA as well as the other OHV organizations to embrace that and keep bringing these people in. A lot's happened. We went from the COVID closure that started, I think it was March 28th. That went on for a few months. State parks started doing the work out on Oceano. We talked about it. A bunch of us talked like 2 weeks into the COVID thing. It's like, okay, the seasonal bird closure for the snowy plover had just begun. We knew this was going to happen. We knew the birds with no OHV activity, no vehicle access down on the camping areas of the beach or the dunes. We suspected the birds would move over. So that was not a surprise. State parks went out. They were doing their work out there. I wouldn't say that what they were doing was wrong. They were just doing their job out on the beach. And then Center for Biodiversity and some others got involved in the process. And the Coastal Commission issued the cease and desist order to state parks, with the last item on the cease and desist being calling for the beach to remain through October 1st, which is the end of the annual seasonal bird preserve. The important thing for the people that are getting on these calls, and Amy and I did talk about it briefly earlier, OHV is funding the most successful bird environmental project for the snowy plover anywhere on the west coast of the U.S., hands down. Our program, if there was an example to show what OHV can do in conservation, and we're just talking about the species, It is unbelievable. You know, now we do have the whole beach as a bird preserve, essentially, through October. But it's really important for us to convey to our clubs and our members and everything else that we're spending a lot of money. We spend $2.2 million a year just on the bird. And the life of the HCP is like $80 to $90 million. And then you start factoring in the cost of, and I could go on and on for it, but the cost of all of these different environmental problems that we pay for with OHV has to be a factor in this argument. And it's important for everyone to remember we are the conservationists out there. We are the ones spending the money to do this. And without our OHV funds and keeping that park open, you know, they're going to have to start looking elsewhere. But anyways, without going on a rant, I don't know if anyone has questions on what's going on.
Jared, this is Diana.
Uh-huh.
I wonder if we could do something that we tried to do with Carnegie when we were facing the water board type issues, is give people, in order to encourage them to speak, give them a little point that they should cover. We have a tendency in this community, whoops.
Tell me
if you can hear that.
Are we all here?
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
Everyone's back.
Did we survive? Did we just survive the muting?
I didn't hear anything. So, yeah, if you want to start over on that, sorry.
Well, when we were fighting at Carnegie, one of the earlier iterations of difficulties, and prior to SB 249 and a couple of these other bills that were introduced from my senator, one of the things that we tried to do is make sure that people want to speak. They're upset. They're passionate. They're concerned, but they're afraid to speak, partly because they're afraid they're going to make a fool of themselves, or they're afraid that they're not going to make sense, or that they're going to put the community in a bad light or anything like that. It helped an awful lot for us to empower a couple of key individuals and give them not so much, well, talking points is what it is. They have to put their own spin on it. They have to know why that matters to them in order to make this a valid, make it meaningful. If we don't personalize it, it ceases to be substantive. And we have to find a way to do that. But the talking points really help position people to understand. For instance, we still keep testing. This wind and these dust tests haven't stopped. We're continuing to fund them. The birds, this is huge, Jared. Dollars, numbers. If people can keep reiterating a number, like the OHV community spends X number of dollars on an annual basis to provide a program for the snowy plovers that exists nowhere else. This is powerful stuff. And this is not disputable. And how do we make sure that everybody has a piece of this? One of the things that we did when we had a large number of speakers is said, if somebody covered that one, move on to the next one. Or if it hasn't been covered in 20 minutes, say it again. But it sort of puts us into this cohesive community that we keep saying that we are. And it makes us look like we're actually well-educated on this stuff. And there's no reason in this world for us not to help people. Their outrage is justified. But their comments, to be effective, have to be factual. And I don't think any of us dispute that, although let's give kudos to that guy at the commission meeting who literally lost his everything talking about his his family, and he literally cried. He moved people. And there's no reason not to have people do that if they have the courage and the wherewithal. And people like you, Jared, walking up to him later, letting him know what that meant to our community. This is empowering stuff. But talking points seem to me to make sense. Does anyone agree?
Diana, what if we have before the next meeting, a few days before that, but after the OHMVR commission meeting, if we have like a mini conference call and we'll send the information to the board and anyone who wants to come out, we'll have a brainstorming session that then we could pass out in our core of alerts that can, then can be put on social media. So probably we should do it like the 8th or, you know, 9th somewhere, so we can get the information out. Does that sound good to everyone?
Yes.
Yep, sounds good to me.
Me too.
I agree with that, with the unified message, and I agree with what Amy said about doing a meeting before. I think doing an additional monthly meeting before the next big one is would work and is good, and there's nothing to lose from it. I know I always rant on this, but I can't even begin to describe like how crazy the social media thing is. For all the BS on there that just absolutely pisses me off, if I'm like ticked off going over stuff for Oceano and I do a little quick, totally terrible video and post it, they'll go like 10,000 times. I mean, it's like 100 people will share it. So people are engaged. People want to know. People are interested, especially in Oceano right now. And getting this stuff out there, I mean, if you do this stupid like couple-minute video and people read what I post, like 20 people will look at it. You know, you can see how many people read it or like it. 100 people will actually look at it. But you do a little quick video, and it's unbelievable. I mean, the last one was pointless. I mean, 6,000 people watched it a couple days before the Coastal Commission meeting. So social media is definitely the outlet to get the message across. Another thing, real quick, I just got to give some credit to Ed Stoven and Audrey for what they've been doing down there on the radio and on TV. With they've been doing some really interesting shows on. Jim Sudi and I went on one day, came down there, or we did one over the radio and we did a quick one on TV, but they've been doing a bunch of really interesting shows. One day was entirely focused on the corruption with the Coastal Commission and the ABCD. Some good stuff. And they were, I think that's another narrative that we really need to focus on is the, there is some major corruption going on. And I think that needs to be dug into, whether it's with Corva or outside Corva quietly. But good job, Ed.
Hey, thank you. Oh, by the way, we had I have a radio show. SDRC has a radio show on a big, powerful station one day a month. We have 1 hour on Sunday from 1 to 2 p.m. And 2 months ago, we had Jared and Jim Sudi on the radio. You know, they called in. Then last month, we just talked a lot about it. And you know, there's three areas where we got a problem. Well, for the Coastal Commission, Fish and Wildlife, and air pollution people. But the county supervisor who has the district, Adam Hill, he's also against off-roading out there. And that guy's a bad guy. For those of you who don't know, his office was recently raided by the FBI. And later that day, he tried unsuccessfully to kill himself. So we had a radio show yesterday. And I invited Stacy Kay to come on. She ran against Adam Hill in the last election and just barely lost, only by a small number of votes. And I was hoping she would dish out some dirt on this Adam Hill. And she really took the high road and was careful what she said. But she said that it's very likely that he's not going to be in office much longer and that she's trying to get that seat. And Stacy is a Republican, and she likes off-roading, so we really want to help her. By the way, she said that Adam Hill has missed
27 out of 30-something supervisor meetings. He's just not going, so there's really no reason for him to be in office. And they're waiting until the end of the calendar year to do a recall on him. And she thinks she may be running in the recall as early as this coming March. So, you know, there's a number of moving parts in here. And for those of you who follow politics, you know that when a representative has an area in a district and there's something that the representative wants, the other people who represent in that level of government, whether it's city council, county supervisor, state assembly, or Congress, the other people generally go along with that person. So Adam Hill doesn't like off-roading in Oceano, so the other supervisors are a lot more likely to go along with him so that he'll go along with them when they have something in their district. So this guy's really a problem, and he needs to get taken out of office as soon as possible. Okay, that's it.
Thanks, Ed.
I just want to remind everyone of something. When we're saying things, when we're commenting at the meeting, you have to know the audience that you're talking to. You have to know the decision makers that you're talking to. In this case, you're talking to the administration. You're talking to Mark Gold. You're talking to Secretary Crowfoot. Just understand that these people are over the Coastal Commission and State Parks. They are the ones making the decision. They're the ones we need on our side.
Absolutely. Don't forget the county supervisor, though. We need the supervisor wanting us open, too.
Well,
so
Adam
Hill
has not. I think the supervisors, now that Adam Hill has sort of excused himself from all the meetings, Bruce can speak to this, Bruce Witcher, better than we can, of course, but without him, you're right, his position isn't as strong. But they're going to follow what the state does as far as the documentation, and that's going to mean a lot. By the way, Bruce Witcher and I had a personal update on the PWP, the Public Works Plan, 2 weeks ago, and we were told by people sort of on the side that we weren't being effective enough to getting politicians on our side from the Democratic majority. So I'm just going to put that out there, say that's something we need to work on. Now, Kathy's helping with that. We thought of putting together another petition that people would just sign, and we can sort it by assembly and Senate districts, and then give the information to a Senate and assembly members about how many people support Oceano Dunes and what's going on. Kathy is kind of thinking about it. She thinks it won't hurt, but it may not help as much as we would like it to help. So she's considering it. Because sometimes we have to give people the message, like Diana said. So that's my two caveats. Always know who you're trying to influence.
I'm going to interject, just teeing off of Amy for a moment. I know that when I look at our Instagram and our Facebook and some of these ones that are taking off, and I know it's not quite viral, but they're pretty impressive in the numbers of people that we get. Some of the feedback is incredibly critical of people that they may or may not influence what's happening. And I get that when we're frustrated, we're just going to kind of lay it out there. But that has not served us well. I think about the past when, and I used to talk to people about this at the Carnegie meetings. I mean, you get your quote-unquote typical off-roader, and he gets up there in his ball cap and his Fox T-shirt, and he throws in a couple of F-bombs out and stomps his feet. And, you know, the people in front of him, they stop listening and or they're just horrified. Because, yeah, they're some of them are pearl clutchers, and they're making decisions on our behalf. So Amy's theory on, it's not a theory, Amy's comment on let's remember who our audience is, remember who's also looking at our page. And I'm not saying we can't allow open conversation. We have to. And, in fact, we need to invite it. But we also have this obligation, I think, to educate people that that's just not going to help us. So let's move on to something that will, which is back to the idea of how much money did we spend on those birds again? Hey,
$2.2 billion a year.
This is the meat of the matter. Anyway, questions and thoughts.
Dave Sloger here.
Dave, go ahead. Please.
Well, this battle's been going on since 1970, and I have visited the park recently, and these snow fences and orange barriers, and they put hay bales out. All they're doing is making, like, dumps for the sand to get airborne and fly through the air easier. They're not helping the air pollution. The other thing is that the Air Resources Board, I don't believe that they're monitoring this. Now the dunes will be probably closed 8 months or maybe a year, and they need to monitor the air pollution at this time and then compare it with when we were when the off-road vehicles are using the dunes. And then you have a comparison. But no, from what I understood at that last coastal meeting, they're not monitoring it now. So that's about all I have to add to the dune program. I enjoy listening to what's going on, and it's very disheartening. The rangers were up there. Someone told me they were sweeping the plovers out of the camp areas because with a broom trying to get them to move their nest, and some environmentalists saw this. So the rangers were trying to help us, I guess, but if the wrong people see the rangers doing that, it's more mud in our face.
Hey, Jared?
That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you very much. Jared, I want you to talk to Dave.
Yeah, Dave, I was just listening to what you were saying. Somehow, maybe Amy can give me your number. I'd like to talk with you.
Actually,
I would like
you to talk about the monitoring that's going on right now, why it's going on, and help Dave understand what happened with the plovers. I know you got this down pat.
Yeah, I can give you an update, Dave.
Well, what I heard, I didn't see it, or I didn't see it on the website over the Facebook or something, but that the rangers were with a broom or some type of thing like a broom trying to move the plovers out of the camping area.
Dave, Jared's going to tell you that that's what caused that cease and desist order. And you're exactly right. That did happen.
Oh, it did happen. Okay. And that is the rangers are trying to keep the area open and try to move the plovers. But there was the wrong people down there watching. I don't know.
The wrong people watching are everywhere. They're everywhere.
Right.
And we don't know who they are. But what I would like Jared to say to us now is another one of our talking points, and that is we continue to monitor the dust, Dave. We are still measuring. In fact, there's a study that showed May of this year was some of the worst dust on the mesa that they've seen in history, and there was no OHV activity. So we
right.
do continue to measure it. These are the kind of talking points that we have to keep remembering. The effort to move the snowy plovers was done in all good intentions, not letting them find a home in a place that was not going to be available to them before. Kind of like monitored housing, but backfired. And so much
right.
of what we're doing is backfiring, and unless we can figure out how to get a message across about what we're doing right and why what we're doing matters, we're not convincing anybody, and we have to convince people. That's what the future of this park depends on, convincing people that the economic pluses to the area, all of these things, the environmental pieces of the puzzle, all of those things counting up to provide sustainable recreation for the rest of for us, it makes sense. We have to convince. It's an argument. It's a debate. It is lots of different things, but there's ways to go about this, and there's just ways that there isn't. So bringing this up, Dave, you've just told us again what people are believing happened. We are testing. How is it people don't know that? How is it, after all this time, people still don't know that we continue testing?
Right.
We're
and
not
they,
saying
they, the other thing is they cut down these huge eucalyptus trees all across the back of the park, which helped to break the wind and slow the wind down. Now they cut them down so that some people would get a view of the dune or the view of the ocean. And so now the wind is blowing, I believe, at a stronger rate than it ever did.
Absolutely.
And in fact, go ahead, Jared.
No, you're spot on. There's a lot of. I'd love to sit down and chat with you. I mean, I just texted you me to send me your number. But yeah, Dave, you're right about the eucalyptus trees, and Scripps Institute has been out there conducting independent air monitoring. There's a lot of spokes on the wheel here, but I'm gonna have her send me your phone number, and I'll if you're around this week, I'd love to chat with you. And by the way, you're a past president of CORVA, huh?
Yeah, I'm the not the first president. I was the second president of CORVA in 1976 to 1978.
No, that's cool. Thank you very much for your work.
Right.
Dave, this is Jim Woods. Really nice to hear from you.
Oh, hi, Jim. Yeah, I every once in a while I stick my nose in, and I'd like to hear what's going on. And I appreciate Amy and all of you, the hard work you're doing. And I'm looking forward to this 50th anniversary, whenever that is. I'd like to be a part of that.
You got it. You've earned a part of it.
And I'm just going to give a time check. It's almost 8 o'clock on my computer time.
Okay, we're pretty much on track, but I think we could... We had an agreement, I believe, that we are going to have another meeting open to the public to talk about talking points for the Coastal Commission meeting. Oh, no, the OHMDR meeting, sorry. But
no, the Coastal Commission.
Points, well,
the
is there a reason for us not to also do that for the OHMDR?
I think the OHMDR, Kimberlina Wedham, who is an amazing commissioner, she has been taking the lead for the OHMDR Commission with the Coastal Commission, and she knows Mark Gold personally. They've worked together before. They have a relationship. We need to listen from her and take our cues from her. Actually, she'll be letting us know sort of encoded remarks. Anything that she talks about and says, this is important to remember. These are the talking points that she wants us to say, that this is her way of communicating with us during the commission meeting. And as Jarrett said, there's a number of different Oceano Dunes items on the agenda because she knows things that she's saving for this meeting. I know that because she told me.
I guess my point is that we are going to have this OHMVR meeting. Is that on the docket for that as well? And of course it is.
Yeah. No, it is. And it's a good question, but we're preaching to the choir there. They're on our side. It would.
Okay. All right.
They understand what we're trying to achieve, what we need to take from them, especially from Kimberlina, and anybody who's seen her in action, she's amazing, some of the tactics that she feels are going to help.
Okay.
And issues, and I think that would be important for the COSLA Commission meeting. We can air our frustrations with our commissioners at the OHMVR meeting, and they need to understand that. They need to hear us. They need to hear the raw emotion. Because people are frustrated, it's all get out. And they're our representatives, and they are following this through, especially the new people who are actually very powerful in their own right. So we have to get to know them, and they are off-roaders, so they should understand, but they are our voice in a lot of important areas.
Okay.
Okay, Dave, I'm going to sign off. Thanks, Amy, and the rest of the board. Goodbye.
Thank you,
Dave.
Bye. I want to share with everyone left on the call, not that I wouldn't have shared this with Dave too, but one of the things that Ed Waldheim said to me early on is you never miss an opportunity to speak. You draw that comment card when you walk in the door and you submit it. You can always pass if you choose to, but never miss an opportunity to speak. And I've kind of kept that with me, and sometimes I feel like I botch stuff. Sometimes I actually have. But other times it's that voice in the back of my head saying, you need to speak. You need to speak out. You need to make sure that this community is heard. And it's pretty invaluable advice. I'm passing it on to all of you. It's part of Ed's legacy. It's very important. I'm going to move on to the. Do we have more we need to say on the commission meeting, Amy? I'm sorry.
No, actually, one thing I was going to ask Jarrett. I meant to ask him. The person who put together that video with the children and all the pictures, and you were in it too.
Yes, Ginger.
Ginger, if you can share that with me, but also have her do an update.
Okay.
That went over really, really well. That made a big impression.
Yeah, she did a great job on that.
Did an awesome job. So, and that actually, that would be really cool to show at the OHMVR commission meeting.
All right. I will dig into it tomorrow.
All right, thanks.
I am going to allow some people from the north to speak if they have something to say, but let's go to Vinny right now for the Southern Report. I know Ed Stoven might have more to add as well.
Okay, well, you know, with all this COVID stuff going on, it kind of threw a monkey wrench into the operations down here. There's really not a whole lot going on, but we do have confirmation that the two big shows down here, the Sand Sports Super Show and the Off-Road Expo, as of now, they're planning on having them. So I've been working, and we're already signed up for both of them. Thanks to Amy, she got us complimentary spots again. And our spot at the Expo is the twice the size as it was last year. So we got a 20-foot booth this time. So that seems good. You know, I do kind of have some reservations about going, to be honest. You know, I'm not a big, you know, COVID scaredy cat or anything like that. But, you know, you never know. There's a lot of people around, and I don't know. We're just going to have to see how it goes. At the sand show, they do allow people to camp there, the vendors and stuff, and typically that's what I do. I camp there two or three nights, usually two nights. So I've already made reservations, so I've got my RV already set up to camp there and spend the weekend there. And Amy's going to send me the insurance forms I get. Once I get those in, we should be good to go. And as far as I noticed the Point Magoo got their plaques for the awards that they got, which is cool. And I've kind of dropped the ball on the Southern Club of the Year award, so I'm working on that. And that goes to the IE4W, and they've won some of our awards in the past. So I'm working on it, and I'll get together with Dave Cundy. He's the Southern Club guy, and we'll work something out. So other than that, if anybody's got any questions, I'll do what I can, and that's it for me.
Can I have a minute? This is Ed Stovin.
Absolutely. Just one, though.
Okay, the Sierra National Forest, it's east of the Bay Area. They just did they're working on a route management plan where they want to increase the mileage of trails in the forest by about 29 miles. They just recently released their draft alternatives of what they want to do. And there's three alternatives, and I wrote comments for off-roaders on it. And what's going on is there's some trails in the forest that have spur routes, you know, the dead-end routes that go to a viewpoint or a stream or somewhere where people like to camp, and they want to bring those into the system. So this is good for us. I supported it. The first alternative is keep it like it is. The second alternative is open all the routes that they're talking about. And the third alternative has them leave a couple routes closed because of conflicts with the users, like head-on collisions. And they want to make a couple of routes into one-way routes also to alleviate collisions. So alternative three looks like the winner there. So I talked about that. Down in the Imperial Sand Dune Recreation Area, they're doing what's called scoping for a new ranger station now. When you go through the NEPA process, there's two times they solicit comments from the people, from the public. Right at the beginning, it's scoping, and then once they organize what they want to do with alternatives, they put out the draft, and you can comment on that. So they're at scoping now. They're at the beginning. We've been talking about a ranger station out there for years, and now they really want to get going with the project. The current ranger, there's two ranger stations because the dunes, there's two ways you can park. You can park up in the north off of Highway 78, and you can park down in the south off Highway 8. The southern half got its own ranger station maybe 8 or 10 years ago, and it's a pretty nice station, you know, it's a permanent facility. Up in the north, where maybe three-quarters of the visits take place, the station is two mobile homes that are bolted together, and it's not very good. They don't have good facilities in there, and staff have told me that on big weekends they've had people being held by law enforcement in the same area as people being treated for injuries. So they really want to get a better station up there. So I'm fully supportive of it, and the comments for that are due at the end of the month. The comments for the Sierra National Forest were due, I think, today or yesterday. I got them in last week. So if anybody loves the dunes and want to comment on the ranger station, I encourage you to get in there and comment. I'll be getting mine in the next day or two. That's all I have. Thank you, Diana.
Absolutely. Ed, can you tell us how to access the place to make comments?
I guess I can send link around. If you go to the Bureau of Land Management's website for the El Centro office, it should be up there. Let's see. I have the link open on my computer. I'll send it to the board.
That would be, yes, would you please? Thank you.
Oh, wait. Let's see. I got to find an email that has the board and the other people that get it besides the peer directors. I don't know. All right, I'll just send it to
you know
the board.
What?
If anybody wants to know.
Just send it to me. I'll send it on.
Okay. Diana at Western Scientific?
Sure, that's great.
And the one that pops up when I... Dunes. Okay, it says Dunes in the subject.
Okay, that's perfect. I won't get it during this call, but I will send that on tomorrow morning with this. As soon as we're done. We have an opportunity for guest comments and questions unless there's anyone else from the South or the North that wants to interject at this point.
Bruce from the North, I'd like to interject.
Absolutely.
Okay. I was just checking the OHMVR Commission website. I see they finally got the two new commissioners posted up there. You got Roger Salazar, and it does have a biography for him. And Tina Brazil is posted up there, but no biography yet. So that means
you
got 8 out of 9 of the positions. Not that I'm aware of. I think most of my relatives are up in the Marin and Sonoma County area.
Okay.
But you never know.
All right, so we're not asking for a confession here, Bruce. It's okay.
Well, I've never gotten any Father's Day cards from Turlock, so.
Touché. We are going to open this to... Go ahead.
Before you go on, and also on the commission meeting, yes, it's on Zoom, but it will also be on the CalSpan. So you can, if you just want to watch and not participate, or if you want to catch it later, you know, when it's archived, it should be available there also. Now you can move on. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to open it up to our guests. And if there's any questions or comments, because you certainly are free to do that any time, but now is a moment in time for you.
Okay, I'll start off. This is Terry Work. To be honest, I'd really like to see more information being put out there about Oceana Dunes. One of the main reasons is I am sick and tired of so many people coming up and saying, are the dunes open? Can I go on the beach today? Let's keep them informed. They're lazy. Unless it pops up in front of them, they're not going to know anything. We can do banners. We can use our Facebook page. The Instagram account is great. We just got to hound it into these people over and over again. And also you mentioned about Carnegie. We should hit them on that. We got to let them know because they're posting up. They think it's open at times.
Okay. Other comments? All right. Let's move on to the CORVA 50th anniversary. And who is going to address this?
I guess I'll just say that my hope, we're still working on the 50th anniversary for the OHMVR division, and because Brian is not doing it anymore, we had a bit of a setback. So now Don Schmidt, for those who know him, he's a retired annuitant, is in charge, and we're going to piggyback somehow on that effort. That's where we are right now. which is the most cost-effective and sort of makes sense.
It's very appropriate. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Mr. Moore, it's your moment.
So I sent out the numbers. As usual, nothing spectacular to report. We're still hanging in there.
That's so reassuring, Mike. Okay.
Well, you know, it's a boring industry. That's why I didn't go into accounting.
Can you? Are we seeing a drop in donations with the COVID? I mean, I suspect there's been changes.
Well, I mean, membership's holding steady. Donations are down, yes. We've lost our donations. We made up for it in merchandise, so the first part of the year. So all in all, our P&L is not that bad. You know, we're trending below last year. But again, last year was a banner year. So what I look at is the balance sheet, and our balance sheet is still strong. Our cash position, we're still about 40,000 ahead of where we were last year at this same time. So, you know, we've managed to keep it up. Fortunately, we have not had a lot of big expenses. Of course, our war chest for the legal fund, et cetera, continues to grow. So that's healthy. Last year, again, was a good year. We didn't spend a lot of money. So, but hopefully things reopen so we can, you know, if we had a couple of events and a couple of shows, we'd be doing really well.
Vinny, how are you, assuming these shows happen, how are you for merchandise?
I'm doing okay with merchandise. I'll have to get together with Steve Gardner and restock some things, but I think we're doing okay. And I did mention I'm working on getting the permits for Truck Haven too, so that's still 6 months away, but I'm working on that also. So
yeah, okay. Well, you gotta keep on going, yeah. Keep on trucking. Who knows?
Yeah. I did a recap of the inventory last week, Vinny. I sent it to Amy and Jared, but I'll send that to you as well.
Thank you.
Okay.
Our neck gaiters. How are we doing on those?
Was that a question for me?
I don't know exactly. It might be actually a question for Ken, now that I think about it. Because I know if we were going to reorder them, he was going to source a U.S. company, and this has proven to be extremely difficult. So I'm wondering what our stock looks like. Because
Diana, this is Jim Woods. There are companies that do make them in this country. I've been one of them. I want to buy American. And one of the companies I've looked into, not for those, but they are made in America, so it can be done. But it's hard as hell to find. So kudos to Ken for trying, and I understand how it didn't work out the way he thought it was going to be.
Yeah, this is the norm, and unfortunately we have to dig to the next level and the next level. Jim, though, any of those companies, if you could get them, probably to Ken. It would help because I think, you know, these things can act as masks. And I think this is going to be with us for a while. I think that's pragmatic. And I think the idea of the neck gaiter in the beginning wasn't always about masks. But the dual purpose of it is kind of, you know, the two birds with one. Go for it. So that would be appreciated. If you would get any of those sources to him, that would be great.
Yeah, well, the neck gaiter, we bought 200 and we sold 52 so far. So.
Oh, geez. I thought we were going to sell out of those things within literally a week.
Yeah. No, we've sold out first.
Okay. Thank you, Mike, as always. We have last meeting's minutes. I actually don't remember seeing them, Amy. Were they sent out?
No, I sent out a link, and I apologize for doing it a little late. We're having all our meeting minutes online now. And on our website, it's not a page that is yet, because we're still working on it, it's not in the menu, but you can go there and all the meeting minutes from 2020 are there, including the minutes from the annual meeting. And I'd ask just everybody go and look at them so we can figure out which ones we've done. I think we've done everything except from the annual meeting part one and annual meeting part two forward. So that would mean April, May, and June we have to do. So what we can do is everybody during the next week, if you can access them online and view or read it, then we can take a vote online and memorialize it in the next meeting.
Hey, Amy, I tried to get to that website and it wouldn't load for
me.
I don't know if it's nope.
Yeah, same with me. I just tried to open it and it didn't open.
Okay. Well, I just made it, so I might have to ask Daniel's help. I tried out the link and I thought it opened for me, but I could be wrong.
It went to the Corba website. There's a dead link in the website.
It says resource not found.
Okay.
Okay. So we have.
I'll give it to Daniel to fix. But
so
actually, it just came up on my. On mine perfectly. So I don't know why. Huh. All right. I'll try and figure it out. But.
Amy?
Yeah.
What browser are you using? Because it might be a browser thing. I run into that at work.
Chrome.
And what browsers are you guys trying to open it as?
Yeah. I'm on Chrome.
You're on Chrome,
yep,
too?
Yeah, I'm
okay.
On Chrome also.
Yeah, Chrome, yeah.
I'll ask Daniel.
Okay.
I was trying to be a techie, and I'm not.
Amy?
So, yeah.
Amy, this is Jim. First of all, the semichrome, that's not right, guys. That only polishes aluminum. Why aren't we just using Daniel and the people that know how to use this? Your talents and your skill set, and I'm no good with computers. I'm okay. Let's give this stuff to Daniel. Let him do it. Here it is. Please put it on. We pay you. That's what we pay him for.
Yeah.
I
just wanted to do it before the meeting, and so I couldn't get in touch with him at 5, so I did it myself. And it shows you how it was an attempt.
I understand.
I'll get
into it. I'm really going to walk away from it. I can't do because I'm not in that. I don't understand that thing. So yeah, I think it'd be important to have him do that. So next meeting we can vote on these minutes.
Yeah, I'm sending and forwarding him what I sent to the board and having him check it out and figure out why the link. Because I checked the link before. I'm always curious about. I want to make sure that just in case Daniel isn't available, that I still remember how to do stuff on the website, and I still can load files and do all that, so that somebody knows. Just that it isn't just one person, and sometimes I just play around with it a little bit just to make sure that I remember how to do it all. But I appreciate the voter support, and I'm sending it to Daniel right now. I'm telling him I tried to do this, but it didn't work.
So this email will get to us all before our next monthly meeting, and it will take a moment to read them because we are going to vote certainly on approving minutes on the next call. I would like to hear from any of our guests that have questions, thoughts. And I'd like to hear from each of you. If you're really interested in joining the board, we'd love to have you. Did they all hang up?
Nope. Hey, I'm still here, but I'd like to say I was in a It's called a Zoom meeting, and I was very happy to see a Corva representative at their meeting. I know Dave Cundy could speak more on that, but I was very happy to see some presence from Corva with the clubs, especially in the South.
Very good.
And David can give more information.
Dave, you there?
Yes, I'm here. Yeah, so I've been on a lot of Zoom meetings and meeting with different clubs, and actually joined one of the clubs, the Trailblazers out there in Bakersfield. And I'm trying to get the word out. I've been telling them a little bit about Oceana, what's been going on there, and a little bit about what Corva's been up to as far as helping. And I've been getting a lot of good feedback about that. So that's really what I've been up to lately. I do want to meet with Vinny. If we're going to go personally down and do the award, I'd like to be there with him so that we could show a little more. I could actually show a little more support for Vinny on that award.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Yep, I'll keep you in the loop.
Thank you, Vin.
Where are your Corva neck gaiter? A brief review. We talked a bit about Amy gave us some background on what's happening on the state level and where this cease and desist order came from and what we were kind of looking at. Jared filled us in extensively on Oceano Dunes, and I feel we got some absolutely wonderful feedback on that, and I think we've decided that we are having a meeting to hopefully come up with a list of talking points to make sure that our community and the advocates, the passionate people that represent us and represent the recreation at Oceano Dunes, will be well prepared to speak on our behalf and to speak on their own behalf. Ed Stoven, thank you so much for your efforts. It is so appreciated, especially the Sierra Week. I didn't even know that was going on, and I appreciate it. Mike, as always, thank you so much for what you do. We are in a position to adjourn early if the board would like to make a motion to do that. Or
real quick, sorry to interrupt, Diana. I just got to add one quick thing here. At 6 o'clock tonight, the man behind the scenes, John Kinley, Instagram John, he did this really cool. The Instagram page is XLADV. It's XL Adventure Motorcycle Rider. He did this 40-minute live interview. I got to send it to the board. I took some screenshots from it. It is epic. John's whole garage is Corva orange. He's got the banner up. He's got the KTM out. He's got the orange helmet. He's wearing the Corva shirt, the Corva hat. He did an awesome interview with this guy talking about Corva, talking about land use issues in California. So I just got to real quick give props to John. And if for those that use Instagram, check it out. It's you go to XLADV. That is the name of the account. And when you get to the account, you just click on their profile picture, and John's, oh, it looks like they posted it. So, anyways, check it out. He did a great job tonight. That's all.
Thank you, Jared. Anyone else? So, motions are not mine to make tonight. Do we have a motion to adjourn this meeting?
This is Mike. I will make
like
a motion to adjourn.
I'll second it.
Mike and Vinny and somebody else, thank you all.
Bruce.
Shall we have a vote? Shall we adjourn? All those
Let's
in
adjourn.
Favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Night.
Night all.
Night all.
Bye.